Please silence all electronic devices.
The notion that he would have somehow limited his own personal financial losses as a result of that briefing is in itself, it raises questions of insider trading, questions of even legality.
The thing that has struck me this week is Governor Cooper's leadership, and I have been really impressed with his kind of fiscal restraint, if you will.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the northern regions of Wake County, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Glad to have you along, as always. I'm sitting Indian style in a walk-in closet in my house with a blanket over my head and a computer in front of me. Weird days, weird times indeed. But that doesn't mean we are not going to make every effort we can to review the week in state politics. We've been doing this segment for more than 3 years now and wanted to try to do it remotely. So Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch is on the line from his office in downtown Raleigh, and Becky Gray with the John Locke Foundation is speaking with us from her home in Raleigh. Hello.
Hey there.
Hi, guys. Good to be with you.
As I noted last week, everything that we're about to discuss is quite fluid, and I should note that our conversation is being recorded early Friday afternoon. Let's begin with Senator Richard Burr, who is facing growing calls to resign. NPR broadcast a story Thursday morning. It included a recording of Burr addressing donors in D.C. in late February. He was warning them about the coronavirus. Hours later, another story broke. According to ProPublica, Burr made 33 transactions selling or dumping as much as $1.7 million in stock late last month, this with the prospect of COVID-19 on the financial horizon. Last night, Fox News commentator Tucker Carlson, a staunch conservative, said that Burr must either explain himself immediately or resign. Today, fellow North Carolina Senator Tom Tillis said that Burr must explain himself. Burr issued a statement this morning. It said, in part, that he has asked the Senate Ethics Commission chairman to open a full and transparent review. Becky, should Richard Burr resign from the U.S. Senate?
Well, I think to start with, he needs to explain this. Now, what he said was he was following the news, as a lot of us were, probably, you know, he was following it a little bit closer and had information that the rest of us didn't have, but that the decisions that he made were based on news reports. That's what he said so far. He's also, Jeff, as you mentioned, asked for a Senate ethics question into this. But here's where it really comes down to me is, you know, can we have the confidence in Senator Burr? And there are other senators as well who have had stock transactions during this time. So it is Senator Burr, and of course we care about that in North Carolina, but it's with other senators as well. And I think it comes down to, during this time of crisis, when we are all nervous and in some cases kind of panicky, to have the confidence that our leaders are doing what is best for all of us, not trying to enrich themselves based on the situation. I think it comes down to, can we still have confidence in Senator Burr and these other senators who apparently have also cashed in or sold stock early? That to me is the question. You know, can we have the confidence that we need to have during this very difficult time?
And I'm going to work Rob in here in just a second, but a little bit of context. Those senators that you allude to, Kelly Loeffler, Republican of Georgia, Jim Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, based on reports that have emerged today, they all dumped stock as well. So that's for context. Becky, the follow-up for you, just briefly, before we get to Rob, scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of confidence in Richard Burr moving forward? 1 being the least, 10 being the most amount of confidence.
To be honest, probably about a 2 or 3 right now. I have confidence in Richard Burr's experience in the Senate, you know, through the years. But competence and confidence, Jeff, are two different things. And I think that right now, Richard Burr has a real confidence problem.
Yeah, wow. This is incredibly troubling news. It was both Senator Burr and, I believe you said, Senator Loeffler from Georgia, who attended a January 24th briefing. We need to remember that Senator Burr is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee in the United States Senate. He receives all kinds of briefings and special access to information that others don't have. And the notion that he would have somehow limited his own personal financial losses as a result of that briefing is in itself, raises questions of insider trading, questions of even legality. But setting that aside, to me, the most disturbing aspect of all this is the betrayal of his constituents. I mean, here's a person who had information a long time ago about the potentially and likely dire consequences of this pandemic, and was at the same time that the president of the United States was saying, no big deal, this is going to go away. And Burr did absolutely nothing to contest that. Indeed, he spoke publicly about how America was prepared for this. So it's just incredibly disappointing. Obviously, Burr is coming to the end of his Senate career anyway. He's in the last couple of years at this point anyway. But I think he has real trouble continuing. And the fact that Senator Tillis is indeed speaking out against it shows how gravely concerned even Republicans and conservatives are about his behavior.
Rob, let me ask you a follow-up here, which is, if Burr ought to go, ought Loeffler, the newly appointed Republican senator from Georgia, Inhofe from Oklahoma, and Feinstein of California all go as well? I mean, depending on the particulars and the specifics of this, but if painting a broad brushstroke here, each of these U.S. senators dumped seven figures or high six figures of stock, perhaps not sounding the requisite alarms that a lot of people have said they should have called for, should all of them resign? And is that realistic?
If they receive the kind of intelligence briefings that we believe that Loeffler, and we know Burr and Loeffler received as early as January 24th, if the other two, and I think there are maybe some questions about Inhofe and Feinstein as to what they actually knew and when, but if in fact that is demonstrated, absolutely. This is basic public protection 101. Government officials have a duty to their constituents first, and if they have abandoned that or it's been a matter of dereliction of duty, then at a critical time like this, I think they would lose any possible credibility of continuing in office.
Let's turn our attention to the state level. Testing is up. Cases of the virus are up. There was another executive order from Governor Roy Cooper. It bans bars from being open, limits in dining at restaurants, also waives some regulations for unemployment applications. The Employment Security Commission, which handles unemployment claims, was inundated a day after that executive order. State House Speaker Tim Moore announced working groups to consider various policy proposals to deal with COVID-19 in the coming weeks and months. Also, I think of note, commencements at Duke and UNC were postponed, and there is much more. I can't list it all right now. What was the most remarkable thing that happened in our state this week, Rob?
It's hard to remember when this week began. I mean, it's been just obviously unprecedented. And I think the stunning rapidity with which we have lost all sort of traditional normal life experience in our state, and indeed perhaps even globally, has just been a tremendous shock, a psychological blow really to all of us and to the state and the nation and the globe. And you know, just losing so many things that we take for granted, I think, is struck us. But again, there's just absolutely no choice in the matter. I don't think there's any doubt that Governor Cooper has done the absolute right thing. A friend of mine who said he saw Governor Cooper in person, and maybe you all have, I haven't had a chance to in recent days, said he just looked incredibly tired. This has been an incredible drain on him personally and on his administration. These people are working, you know, night and day trying to respond to this crisis, and it's a shocking time.
Well, I agree with Rob. I mean, we are in uncharted territory and unprecedented time here. Jeff, the thing that has struck me this week is, first of all, Governor Cooper's leadership, and I have been really impressed with his kind of fiscal restraint, if you will, and really looking at what we need today, looking to the federal government as a partner, looking to the General Assembly as a partner, removing some regulations so that we can get unemployment benefits to folks who need it. Looking at those kind of things, looking, you know, some of the questions of, you know, don't we need more money? Don't we need more money? And of course we do. But I think that he's being very prudent and thoughtful as he moves forward with that. So, first of all, I really do want to say I think the governor's doing a great job. Mandy Cohen also is doing a fabulous job. It is so refreshing after months of bickering and fighting back and forth between different legislative branches to see everyone coming together. I hope this continues, but I think that the governor is doing what he does and what the executive branch of government is designed to do. I think that the legislative branch is doing what they need to do and what their lane is, if you will, forming these committees, looking at things, being ready. They're making preparations, I understand, if they need to move forward with some allocation of money, looking at the savings that we have set aside to make sure that those are used now that we need them. That's my takeaway from this week, is rather than what you see, in some other states, more of a panic, knee-jerk reaction to things. I think that our leaders have come together in a very common sense way to get us through this. And I mentioned earlier about the confidence in our government and our leaders. And I think in North Carolina, we can have confidence in our leaders as we move through this. So that was really my, looking back over the week. And as Rob mentioned, a lot going on, a lot happening, things we never thought we would see. But that's what my takeaway for the week is, Jeff.
I would acknowledge that, of course, the backdrop to this is that it has been bitterly bipartisan here in recent years. We still don't have a state budget, and Republican legislative leaders and the Democratic governor have really been at each other for a long time. But that has, by and large, subsided here in recent days. And I haven't heard anybody complaining about a reasonable approach, it seems, for now from both sides. So that is reassuring, and it shows us that it certainly can be done in unprecedented times, as you both have noted here. I will ask you both briefly if you want to comment on Dan Forrest, the current lieutenant governor, who is the Republican nominee for governor. He's challenging Roy Cooper for this post for the next 4 years, and he offered some criticisms earlier this week about the executive order. Then he backtracked on those a little bit and tried to make more of a process argument, saying that Cooper didn't go through the proper channels and go about implementing this executive order in the manner in which he should have. I didn't notice Forrest gathering a whole lot of support, at least from elected officials or politicos, on this. Do either of you want to defend Forrest's, I'll call it a campaign message / also check on Cooper this week?
Well, I sure don't want to defend it, but I think I'm very happy that the lieutenant governor has come to his senses, and it seemed that he was just incredibly ill-informed and flew off the handle with an ill-timed and ill-considered comment criticizing the governor for taking action, actually criticizing the substance of the decision to close restaurants and bars. Obviously, he's had to run away from that with his tail between his legs, and I think he probably will just keep his mouth shut for the foreseeable future in these matters.
Well, I'm not going to defend or not defend the governor, but I do have a comment about it, and that is something else that we really are seeing as this thing progresses, is that we have guardrails in place. We have a structure in place during this very unprecedented, uncharted territory. We have our state constitution. We have state statutes. It is clearly defined what the responsibilities are of the executive branch, of the legislative branch, and who does what and who does it when, and checks and balances in place. If there is something to guide us through that, it is those kind of things that we have in place. I think that, I don't disagree with Rob. I think that Dan Forrest questions about, and he did back off and say he was not questioning whether or not the bars and restaurants should be closed. He was questioning the way that the process happened. I think the governor made the right decision. There's been a lot of legal back and forth on social media and news media and all about whether what Governor Cooper did was legal in the way that he did issue the order to close bars and restaurants. But at the end of the day, I think that, what we have is what we have. I think the governor made the correct decision. But I also think it's important to just kind of have a nudge and a reminder sometimes to say, hey, we do have these guardrails. We do have the regulations. The Constitution is still in effect. Our state statutes are still in effect. So I don't think it's a bad thing that we've kind of had that reminder. But as far as the bars and restaurants being closed, as many other states have done, I think Governor Cooper has done the right thing with that. And again, another takeaway from this week is that we have seen the governor working well within his authority with the executive branch, and seeing the legislature preparing and getting ready to do what they need to do in their branch. So I think having these rules and regulations, these guardrails that we have, is an important part of this. And I think that it is reassuring in this very disruptive time to have those guardrails in place.
As we record this on a Friday afternoon, I just glanced at Twitter and noticed some news has broken as it relates to the second primary, a runoff in the 11th congressional district. No candidate, this is a reminder to listeners, had received 30% of the vote, and a primary had been scheduled for May 12th. And just glancing at Twitter again, as Becky and Rob and I are chatting here on an early Friday afternoon, it appears as though that has been moved due to COVID-19 reaction. This isn't particularly surprising to me. Do either of you just want to weigh in or express any reaction to that? I don't think either of you knew, as this just came down in the last few minutes.
I mean, I think the big issue here really going forward is we've got problems for not just that one little primary or runoff, but we have problems with elections across the country. And there's going to be a real challenge to make sure that we figure out a way to have our electoral process move forward as it should during this critical election year, that we have no delays in, you know, the big vote in November. It really probably should have long since been taken as a national action to make it possible for everybody to participate by mail-in voting. We have a hodgepodge of systems and just a checkerboard across the country of all kinds of mixed up systems. And that causes me some concern. I don't have any terrible concerns about what's going on in North Carolina, but I think all Americans should have confidence that the election is going to go forward as it should in 2020. And it seems increasingly clear that this crisis that we're in the midst of is going to be with us for some months.
Yep, Rob, I really agree with your point about the confidence in the election, the confidence in the integrity. And if putting these elections off, and I know that the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party here in North Carolina are moving some of their county conventions and district conventions and all online and getting that set up so that they can continue with that and, again, preserve the integrity in the elections and the process that we have. And I think that is very important. And if it means putting these off, then I think that's absolutely what we should do. The other thing is, I think we all need to remember that all of our public services, everything is so stretched at this point. And if you just imagine all of the voting precinct places where people go, whether it's churches, whether it's schools, everything that it takes for a county to put together an election. I think this is, we've got to have all hands on deck to get through this coronavirus crisis that we're dealing with. And I think to try to hold any kind of election right now is just, not only would it bring into question the integrity and the confidence that we would have in it, but just it just would be a foolhardy way to use our resources right now.
And again, that's Executive Director of the State Board of Elections, Karen Brinson Bell, issuing an order early Friday afternoon to reschedule the second primary. It's for the Republican nomination in the 11th Congressional District. For now, that runoff second primary has been moved to June 23rd, 2020. Before we get you on your way, I wanted to pull the curtain back, as I like to say, and ask you a little bit more of a personal question if you want to play along. You're both keeping your distances, as best I can ascertain. You're both keeping your distances from colleagues and neighbors and crowds. What has been the best part, if that doesn't sound like too ridiculous of a question, for this partial isolation for each of you? Becky?
Well, for me, for our work at the John Lott Foundation, my colleagues and I can correspond. We have some online meetings scheduled and those kind of things. We can do a lot of our work online. So the best thing for me, and I will I will share this with you. I have had on the same pair of sweatpants for the last 5 days. So just being a little bit more relaxed as we're trying to sort through the news and do analysis and look at things. I think just having the more relaxed atmosphere of being at home and just being a little less structured in my day has been the best part so far.
I should say, you mentioned at the outset that I'm at my office, and I actually did come in just for this purpose, and the door is closed, and there's hardly anybody else here, so we're practicing social distancing here. For me, the best thing, well, there have been two things, but one personal, one professional. Professional has just been working with some remarkable colleagues, communicating online. It's been a challenge, and yet our reporters at NC Policy Watch have broken some incredibly poignant and important stories about what life is like for the people at McDougal Terrace in Durham who are living in hotels and trying to survive in this time, what it's like for immigrants who are trying to deal with ICE raids and being arrested at a time like this and the possibility of going into detention. Some incredibly important stories there. Personally, it's a challenge like all of you. You know, my children live far away, and I've been communicating with a daughter who's a restaurant worker in New York City and contemplating what life for her is going to be like for a long time. And that's been a challenge, but we've been communicating and staying in touch with our friends like everybody else is probably trying to do. And so I have a lot of blessings to be thankful for.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President with the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. I hope you both enjoy your weekends.
You too. Thank you, Jeff.
Back at you, guys. Take care.
How are you passing the time? What has been a moment of relief, perhaps a bit of levity in these weird few days and what we expect to be several weeks, if not months, that lie ahead? Engage with us on Twitter, J_TIBS, of course, at WUNC as well. You can subscribe to the WUNC Politics Podcast wherever it is that you do that on-demand listening, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. You can stay up to date with much of what is happening across the state and in your communities in response to this COVID-19 story, this coronavirus outbreak. You can do that at our website, WUNC.org. As always, thanks for listening and engaging. For Becky and Rob, my name is Jeff. Sincerely hope you do enjoy your weekend, and we'll plan to be back with you again next week.